Is education an area where Alaska could lead the world? What are the strengths Alaska already has in education, and what would it take to build on them? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Maybe we need to look at improving lower education if we really want excellence in higher education. Our number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. What would you do for Alaska with unlimited educational resources? On Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
How do you get men to wear a life jacket when the fact is that 90% of those who die in boating accidents in Alaska are men? Well, most men won't listen to this message, but they might listen to you. So have them pledge to wear a life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Have them fill out a Pledge to Live card at pledgetolive.org. That's pledgetolive.org. Make them promise so they make it back home. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
The very first time that Talk of Alaska went to a weekly program, the subject was education. There was an education summit going on out in Girdwood, and it was about education reform and how we get more accountability in our schools and underperforming schools and all that sort of thing. Well, that's all still going on. What was very interesting is that as we started broaching this subject on the program with Education Commissioner Shirley Holloway, it was at that time, the calls just started flooding in. Teachers and retired teachers in particular called, and they said, you know, if you go to standardized tests, you're gonna end up teaching to the test, and all kinds of other things are going to fall through the cracks that the teachers are simply not going to have time to teach the students because they're busy making sure they pass the tests. And, well, that's kind of what they ended up finding out when they went to standardized tests, is that some people have real problems, basic problems that contribute to why they can't quite pass the standardized test. And if you keep pounding away at that, maybe you're forgetting some of the things that education can do for people. There's starting to be some hard results now where they basically looked at the science skills of students and they compared them to their test results. And they discovered that actually some of the lower test result kids were actually better at the science. So it's not a simple thing, and we're all threading our way through it because it's an investment. It's a huge public investment. And every time we bring the subject up, we really generate the calls. We really get a lot of interest from people, so we're doing it again. And this time what I like to do is more of a blue sky type of thing, trying to imagine what we really would like, and then maybe we can kind of pare it back down to what it is that we can actually get and what are the steps between where we are now and where we would really like to be. Because, you know, but I think it's nice to blue sky it once in a while and maybe look at, you know, how close and how far away are we from some of the things that we would really like to have in our educational system. I mean, maybe we're really close in some things and we don't even realize it. Our phone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, and Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. So I have a great panel with me today. Joining me by telephone is the president of the Ilisavik College in Barrow, Pearl Brower. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Pearl.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning, and glad to have you on the program. I know it's been getting that college going and keeping that college going with the kind of resources that it takes has got to be a monumental task. And how do you think things are going there now at Ilisavik? This is I think we should point out for our listeners, this is a tribal college. I think our only one.
We are, Steve. We are actually the only tribal college in all of Alaska, and we offer two-year programming. We have an Associate of Arts, an AA degree, and then Associate of Applied Science degrees. And we have certain individualized programming. For instance, you can get an Associate of Arts degree in Inupiaq Studies and some focuses. We have focused programs. We have been Elisavet College since 1996 when we became a standalone entity and came away from the University of Alaska system. We originally were a part of that system, and then prior to that, we were a number of different higher education initiatives on the North Slope. I think it's a true testament to our North Slope leaders that they recognize the need for higher education and recognize the need for an institution that was local, that our residents could continue to get higher education right here at home. One of the pieces that's exciting now is that we've actually been able to expand. This last year, we received an award of being one of the 50 fastest growing community colleges in the nation with an enrollment of under 2,500. So I think that that's a real testament to our students who are all across the state and even some in the lower 48 recognizing the need for higher education, as well as all of our staff on site really putting forth the effort to talk to students and to get them in the door and to educate.
Pearl, what do you think is the advantage of your tribal college compared to an urban university setting?
I think it's kind of twofold. If you're talking about somebody in the general urban population, we kind of call it the rural Alaskan experience. And it's an opportunity for someone who, if they're in an urban area, to really have an experience to come into a rural setting, a small college, get that Arctic experience. So for adventurers, I think that that's a really neat piece. We've actually had quite a few students take advantage of that all the way to the East Coast of the U.S. On the other level, I think that we really provide our students in rural Alaska an opportunity to have a stepping stone. If they're not so sure about leaving their small communities and going straight to Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau, those larger hubs, we really offer an opportunity for students to come and get a great education in a two-year setting that really models still their tribal and rural experience. And I think that that's really important. It's a nice jumping off point for individuals who just aren't sure about that urban setting, and they can come to Elisavet and still be immersed in a tribal setting and also the rural experience.
This is really reminding me of when we had the new president of APU on, Don Bantz. And he was talking about, what they could offer at Alaska Pacific, being a smaller college, a private college, and stuck back in the woods there. And he says, we just have a really great ratio of professors to students, and we can really concentrate on the things that we do well in the way that a big publicly funded university could not. And we got all these calls from people who had great experience being in school there. We got calls from all these alumni, especially rural Alaska kids, who said, I would have never made it at a big college. This was just exactly what I needed. And I can see this the same thing here. Sometimes I think we don't. I know for me, coming from a rural place in Pennsylvania, I would have liked, if I hadn't had advanced placement in a college while I was still in high school, to go away in the summer and find out what it was really like, to just suddenly be dropped into that experience with these huge dormitories and all these kids and the anonymity of the whole deal, impersonality of it, would have been exciting to me, but also extremely challenging just to me. And I didn't have the cultural barriers an Alaska native would have by any means. So I can see where for a number of students, this might be a good option, an option that parents might want to look at very closely. But I hadn't really thought about it the other way you were putting it, of people from the East Coast deciding they want to go to college in Barrow.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful, fascinating, wonderful.
I guess if a person wanted to see polar bears, they probably have a much better shot there than they would in New York State.
True. Very true. There was one just on campus the other day.
That's what I was thinking. And sitting across from me is Diane Hirschberg, Associate Professor of Education Policy, Director now of the Center for Education Policy Research, the University of Alaska Anchorage Institute of Social and Economic Research. Diane, I think that's the longest title I've read on anybody ever.
That's what I'm working on, longest title and most colleges to work in.
So, you know, you've been acquainted with this Alaska situation for how long now?
Well, I've been up here for over 9 years and studying education in Alaska since the early 90s.
Yeah. And ICER is it's an interesting example of what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Because it's the Institute of Social and Economic Research. That can, that's almost gets even to science. There is social science. And some people seem to think economics is a science. But you guys are in a perpetual struggle to keep your research operation going. You have to look for the gigs. You have to look for whatever, an industry or a foundation, somebody that needs research done.
That's right. A lot of people don't realize that we get very little money from the state, other than in the form of contracts with the state. When ICER was founded, it was actually set up by the legislature, and there was an initial infusion of money from the legislature. And then we had a lot of support for a number of years from the Ford Foundation. But certainly since I've been there, it's been a lot of having to find contracts, grants, collaborations with others. We were very fortunate for a time there that the UA Foundation made a significant investment of several million dollars. And that allowed us to do some of the really interesting work that needs to be done but might not appeal to an outside foundation, might not appeal to a private funder. Some of the work that Scott Goldsmith does in explaining how the Alaska economy works, or in making some difficult arguments about the choices we have to make. In our, looking at our taxation policy or what we should be doing with our PFD, those kinds of things that maybe people don't want to attach their private dollars to, but that need to be explored. And so it is quite often a struggle.
Well, I remember in your early years here, I got to know you because you and one of your researchers, Lexi, was looking into Native education,
mm-hmm.
and really discovering problems and delineating them, I think, in ways that they hadn't been before, and showing us that we had a real problem. Is that thrust still going on? That must be pretty hard to fund.
It is, and absolutely we struggle. I have contacts with people in foundations such as the Ford Foundation. We're just not quite what they're looking to fund because they don't necessarily understand what's happening up here in Alaska. We're very small numbers, very far away. I was very fortunate that Ford Foundation did support my work looking at boarding schools. But right now, a lot of what Lexi and I have been looking at in terms of Indigenous education issues has been done on our own, kind of nights and weekends.
Wow. So here's the question, and I want to put it to both of you, and it's how I'm framing this as a blue sky show, and that is, if you had unlimited resources, let's take it with you first, Pearl Brower. If you had unlimited resources, can you give me a list of like three things that you would be ready to spend that money on and saying, thank God somebody finally gave us money to do what we really want to do?
Wow. That is a great, great question, Steve. Well, first and foremost, I think something very, very near and dear to a lot of our hearts within the state is teacher education. We've actually begun a feasibility study to determine if Ilisarovic could indeed offer a four-year degree program in teacher education, simply because we've recognized the need across rural Alaska for our local teachers in our schools. One of the biggest barriers, I believe, that will come out of this study is funding, and how would we fund this? Because this is so important and really gets down to the, you know, the nitty-gritty of education in Alaska is the education of our youth. I think that would be my first and foremost idea on what we could do if we had unlimited funding. The second piece really speaks to, I think, our villages across the North Slope and even throughout rural Alaska. We've kind of gone back and forth about considering having an athletic program on site and having a basketball team, a junior college basketball team, and a junior college volleyball team.
Oh, wow.
We recognize, yes, we've talked about it.
I would have never thought that'd be in your top three. Make your case, Pearl. Make your case.
You know what it is that it actually would bring in about 30 to 50 program active, so that students going after a degree, students every year to campus. It would fill our dorms up. It would offer a real opportunity for some of our students in our rural communities to consider going to and getting higher education. Some of them, you know, sports is really a way to speak to students. And we see throughout our rural communities how important basketball and volleyball can be. And if we were to be able to offer something for students to go on to those next 2 years, I really believe that it would give an opportunity for them to consider even going on further and continuing their education and getting their four-year degree. So it's something that we've talked about, and I think that if we had this, if there was a wish list out there, if we had the funding to provide that kind of a program to our rural students in a rural college setting like Ilisalvik, I think we would see some really interesting and great things happen with some of our students. And the third thing, wow, if we had unlimited funding, oh my goodness, well, how could this not have been my number two? But it's a new facility, definitely. Definitely.
I guess for those listeners that don't know, it should point out that basically they may be acquainted with the old Naval Arctic Research Laboratory, which is now the college.
Is the old NARL, Naval Arctic Research Lab, and it was built in the 1950s. We are actually the oldest tribal college. There's 36 tribal colleges in the U.S., I believe. Steve, I always get that number wrong. So if that number is wrong, but it's close to that. And we are actually the oldest, we are in the oldest facility. I'm in an office that my grandfather built. It's very fascinating. It's wonderful as, you know, a heritage. But in the larger grand scheme of things, it does. It costs quite a bit of money to keep things rolling. And if we had unlimited funding, a new facility would be in that top three for sure.
Wow, that's great. And I think your second item of having a sports program is one that would never have occurred to me. And yet it's exactly the sort of thing that I want to try and reach towards in this program, which is you need to make it really cool so people really want to do it, because education is often about motivation.
It's so true. You know, and that's one of the things we've talked about is that, you know, giving a student or just an individual something more and saying, hey, you know, you were this basketball star, you haven't been drafted by anyone outside of the state, why don't you play for us? And I think that, you know, we've got a lot of students in rural Alaska who don't go on, and I think this would be a real opportunity for them to consider that, a real, you know, for lack of a better term, a real carrot kind of dangling in front of them to say, look at the opportunities for you if you still want to play sports, and we can give you even more with giving you an education. And then on top of that, the new facility, just an incredible added value. If someone, you know, as we all know, if someone has something brand new and they worked really hard for it and it's there for them, there's respect there, and there's a want to keep that good and keep that going. And we really feel that with a state-of-the-art new facility, there really brings an added value, and students can really appreciate that and look up to it and get excited about those great things that we can offer at Illicavik College, for instance.
That's Pearl Brower, president of Illicavik College. And I'm going to throw one of mine in right now, and that is star faculty. I really think Alaska is the kind of place, it's such a really cool place that it really should be able to attract really cool faculty, and that could attract students. And I think that there could be effort to, there could be more done on those lines, I think. But I'm going to go now to Diane Hirschberg. You've had a time, had a chance to think about this for a while. And, you know, we sit at the Elmo Sackett Broadcast Center, and at the end of our driveway is a huge sports arena being built for the University of Alaska Anchorage right now. The Regents were not a whole lot in favor of that. They had some other things, capital items they would rather have had. But the legislature, in its infinite wisdom, decided to build this. And as a result, we're going to see a great upgrade in athletic facilities that I think everybody is really happy about. So Pearl's point two is already taken.
Yes. Well, and you know, I have to say, when you said there are, what do we have as well as what do we want, we've actually been really lucky with the legislature in the last few years. Even as I was talking about Lexi and my work having been a lot of, you know, kind of scrambling it together in the middle of other projects, we did recently receive a very generous funding from the legislature for our new center to look at some of the hard issues in Alaska education. I think the legislature really recognizes that we need to be studying why teachers are leaving. We need to be studying what's happening with our rural schools and what might be some of the innovative options. And the legislature also has recently, you know, we've got the new health sciences building at UAA. We've got funding for engineering buildings at both UAA and UAF. So we're getting there, but this is an investment after a drought, you know, when the oil money dropped off and there were a lot of very lean years at the university. People really had to be creative, but also had to work with less than what they needed. If you look at the current engineering facility, you really know, yes, we need something new. And the other point I've been thinking about is a lot of people don't realize when you invest in education, it's not just giving a blank check. You actually get a lot back. You know, McDowell did a research, McDowell group did a study a few years ago, and what they found was you get a 200% return on your investment in higher education. And if you look at the centers of innovation around the globe, and I think in particular about Silicon Valley since I was in the Bay Area for so many years, the reason you had this amazing, amazing explosion of creativity and economic drivers was because you had Berkeley and Stanford and Santa Cruz and Santa Clara and San Jose State and these amazing minds coming together. And we have that opportunity here, I think, in really innovative ways. There's this cool work that's being done around climate change, around cold climate housing up in Fairbanks, around innovative energy. ICER is partnering with a number of researchers around the state to look at wind energy and other ways that we can make our community self-sufficient and provide some leadership to the rest of the globe in terms of changing the way we use energy. So let's invest in that. That could actually result in huge amounts of money coming back into the state from others who want to learn what we've learned.
Well, that's, two things come to mind on that. First is, you know, so you have the McDowell study, but, you know, probably more could be done to really track how the investment pays off in terms of a skilled workforce, in terms of local hire, in terms of, you know, that's probably a case that hasn't been made as strongly as it really could. And then the other one is also about profile, that we just somehow need to raise our profile of the stuff we already got.
Absolutely. When you talk about bringing in superstars, we have some here. We have the innovative work that's being done around, you know, security using your eyeballs, the work that Kendrick Mock and Bogdan have been doing. We've got, again, a lot of really innovative stuff around transportation, energy, and then we've got these fabulous, our psychology department. If you look at the research that's been being done by our psychology faculty and our psychology students, if you look at our sociology professors that are producing students that are going on to win, you know, these amazing fellowships when they graduate, we really do have some extraordinary faculty who came to Alaska because they want to be someplace that's fun, where you can really make a difference. You know, I always say to people looking at applying for jobs here, if you're interested in something, it may have been studied in a lower 48 context, but it probably hasn't been looked at here. You get to be groundbreaking in your work by virtue of coming to this young and vibrant and growing university system.
Well, if you could add one graduate level program, what would it be?
Boy, that's mm-hmm. a really tough one. I do think we need graduate level work in leadership generally. That's something we've talked about a lot. We've got
like a public affairs, public leadership.
We've got a master's in public administration. We've got a master's in ed leadership. We've got a master's in public health. We don't have doctoral level programs where we can produce our own faculty. And it's not bad for people to go outside, get their training, and come back. But like with teachers, like with what Pearl Brower is saying, if you can prepare people in state, chances are they might stay here. And, you know, we do face often huge problems in recruiting faculty because people don't get how really wonderful it is to be here. You know, if you watch Discovery Channel, your view of Alaska is skewed enough that you might not get what there really is happening here in terms of the education system.
Yeah. Well, I will say it gets to a certain point and it starts to be that the peer environment does it on its own. And we've seen that in some of the science at UAF, where people that have been graduate students there are now all over the place in climate change study. And they're in the leadership all over the place. And it's pretty exciting to watch that. I mean, you know, I've watched that develop.
And
you can trace that all the way back to the International Geophysical Year in 1957.
Yeah.
You know, those people have retired out in the last 4 or 5 years. The last few IGY people have retired out of the faculty. But that was a whole science heritage, an Arctic science heritage that was brought to Alaska. And there's an investment that paid off in a huge way. But nobody's got the numbers on it.
Right. And we are seeing even here faculty who went to UAA as undergraduates went outside and are coming back to become faculty here. And some of them are really, you know, leaders already.
Okay, let's try a call or two. Pearl, you ready for a call or two?
Sure.
All right. Well, let's go to Roger then. Joins the program from out in White Mountain. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Roger. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Oh, good morning. I would like to see more focus on doing a better job from the get-go, i.e. preschool and kindergarten. As for K through 12, if the kids are graded on their progress, so should the teachers, like South Korea, recruit teachers from the top 10% of college grads, tailor our curriculum to our unique state of Alaska, cold weather studies, climate change, etc. I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Roger, you just said it all. I'm going to take a break. Let our panelists think about it as Talk continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Young drivers, texting and cell phone use while driving create distractions. Don't let your next text cause a wreck. If your middle or high school is interested in having a youth representative speak to your students about workplace safety, call Alaska Occupational Safety and Health Youth Safety at 1-800-656-4972. This message is sponsored by Alaska Labor Standards and Safety.
Talk of Alaska. We're talking about what would be our best investment in education. And Roger suggests from White Mountain that early childhood education might actually be it. That what can a college do with a kid that isn't ready for college? That you even have to start earlier than is being started now, like pre-kindergarten, not just K-12. Pearl Brower, what do you think of that?
Well, that's a great, great comment from Roger. And I think I have some of my folks from Illy Stokovic listening in, and I would be completely remiss if I didn't note that we have actually jumped on this bandwagon, for lack of a better term. We recently received in the last, it was last year, two grants, one from the Department of Education and one from the American Indian College Fund in association with Kellogg, with the Kellogg Foundation. And our plan is that what we are starting is an initiative called Ukauchum Ugloa. And for us, that is early learning childhood education, including a language nest program. And for those who aren't very familiar with language nest programming, that's basically taking young 0 to 3 year old children and putting them in an immersion setting, which allows them to learn within their culture and within their language. What our plan is, it's quite this large endeavor, and it's a piece of having this 0 to 3 year old language nest, including a AA degree in early childhood education, which then also has transferability to four-year degree programs within the state. We're working on MOAs with the University of Alaska system right now, which also then, on a third level, will provide some economic development opportunities for individuals in our rural communities, because with this initial degree program, someone could then start a daycare system and a language nest program within their own village community. It's really this multi-layer project that we feel and we hope will address so many of our issues that we're facing in rural Alaska, including the education of our children, teachers in our schools, economic development. So, Roger, we understand the need, and we're really trying to identify ways that we as a college can help move that along so that we end up better equipping our younger generation to obtain higher education and to be really successful.
Diane Hirschberg, this sort of falls into your area of specialty.
Absolutely, and I was really excited to hear what Roger said. In particular, thinking about creating a new set of curriculum around the state that would be based in the place that we are, that both prepare our young people to be ready to go into the college or the workplace, but also grounds them in who they are is really important. One of the, we've just been involved in a study of the new state standards that the Department of Education adopted. And the standards are aligned very closely with the Common Core standards around the nation. But what we don't have to do is teach the same way to get there. Children can learn those standards through any number of ways. I've always said that, when I once had a principal in the northwest of the state complain to me that none of the kids and parents cared about school. All they cared about was whaling. And I looked at him, I said, well, so have you built your curriculum around whaling? And he looked at me like I was crazy. But I know there are some communities that have done this. And if we had unlimited funds, we could really have a lot of time for educators to spend time developing curriculum that was based in the places where they were, so that you could do physics on what does it take to move a 20-ton beast onto the land. You can do biology and chemistry and nutrition studies just on the good things that are in the whale. You can do literature. You could do a comparison of traditional whaling stories in your Inupiaq community with Moby Dick. There's so much that could be done. But it takes resources and it takes a lot of guiding for these, wonderful enthused teachers who come from Minnesota and don't understand the local culture in which they're teaching.
I think you would also find some very precise mathematics involved in how you deal with a whale.
Absolutely. I mean, there is such amazing culture, spirituality and learning around whaling or around seal hunting or around moose hunting. I mean, there's so many things we can do in this state, but it really takes a different vision and an understanding that you don't have to teach to a test in order for students to understand the content of that test, that we can really get them much more excited and engaged. And then the test becomes something that they just have to do along the way because it's required, but it's not some barrier. It's not something that's punishing them. It's simply acknowledging the wonderful learning that our brilliant children have done.
I'm wondering if where does the tracking get done for the success stories? Because we usually end up hearing about the failures. But the success stories, I mean, I know we don't have like an education reporter is going out there and looking for success stories.
This has been one of our gripes. And actually, North Slope Borough School District, I think, is going to be one of the most exciting stories. So there's the work that Illisogvik's doing, but then there's the Inupiat Learning Framework and the other work that's being done to transform the curriculum and teaching in the North Slope to being something that is authentically from the place and yet aligned with state standards and making kids competitive on a national and a global level. And that's a story I know I've been working with folk up there to present what they're doing at international conferences to get it written into papers. But I think there are other stories like that around the state. And it's true, we spend so much time focusing on what's wrong with our schools and, frankly, on blaming children and their families rather than looking at what the system has done over the years to make children less successful, starting with the boarding schools and even before that.
Let's go to Mark, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Mark.
Hey, I think what my thoughts are fit into what's being said already, but just a little background. When my dad graduated from, or when my dad was born, a sixth grade education was okay. And when he graduated from high school, you had to really go after a ninth grade education to, they had ninth grade graduations even. And when I graduated from high school was enough. So you can see the progression over the years. You got to have more education as time passes because the technology of today demands it. And so my suggestion is that you have a two-year program following the regular graduation, but a two-year program that is managed by the local school district with 100% of the dough coming from the state of Alaska. And that would be on the one hand, a public prep school, publicly funded, so that the ordinary kids could go to 2 years of accredited education before they enter the university, if they so chose. On the other hand, they could that 2 year program post secondary could provide help with GEDs for those that dropped out. You know, it's tough for a kid to go back to school when they're 20 years old and sit in a room with 16-year-olds. So it would provide that, but it would be operated by the. My thought is it'd be operated by the local school district completely and the school board, but the curriculums would be worked out with the University of Alaska so that college credit type courses could be accepted. The other advantage of this approach is that if it was state funded, you would relieve the kids from that terrible burden of college loans. for the first 2 years. They go to school in their local community, and then at the state expense, get university credit for it, but they wouldn't have to pay $300 a unit for tuition. So the thought is it would be locally developed by a local school board, run by the local school board and school administration, but it would be two additional years sort of to catch up with where we used to be, over time, a prolonged locally managed education, public education.
Gotcha, Mark. Yeah. Nowadays, I'm kind of shocked at how little you need to have taken in order to graduate from high school in terms of foreign languages. And even, I understand, you don't even have to take calculus anymore. And that's, like, shocking because you can't do science without calculus, period. Mm-hmm. And so something in the middle seems to be needed there. Don't you think so, Diane Hirschberg?
Absolutely. And I like the suggestions that Mark made. There are a couple of programs around the state that are variations of this. We've got a new initiative between Mat-Su School District and UAA through the Eagle River campus. They're setting up what they call an early college high school that's going to allow students to come in and take courses that jointly count toward their high school graduation and college, so that by the time they start in a UA, they're going to have maybe a year or more of college credit under their belt. There's a discussion, I'm not sure where it's at right now, between Sitka High School and UAS and Mount Edgecombe about doing a middle college high school model, which is a model that's in several places around the country where there's high school programs physically situated on community college campuses. I believe it started in New York. I know there's one in Los Angeles. And then there's the program they're doing in the Northwest Arctic Borough School District where they've created a, what I used to refer to as a 2+2 program, but it's a school in Kotzebue where students come in and finish their last 2 years of high school and do a couple years of community college, but it's articulated so that they finish with that either an early childhood AA degree or something for process technology so they can go work in Red Dog or AA nursing. But it's done collaboratively between the school district and the Chukchi campus. And all of these, you know, they're small pilot programs. And again, with, you know, with a lot of funding and really thoughtful evaluation, because I think that's the other point is, I know a lot of people are always nervous. We spend an enormous amount of money in this state on education, and we really need to know that we're spending it correctly. So we'd want to build in with all of these programs really thoughtful evaluation so that we can say it's working, it's sort of working, we need to tweak it, or you know what, this isn't the right way to go, let's throw it out, rather than just continuing to put money in because we haven't actually ask the hard questions about whether or not this is a successful approach.
Pearl Brower at Illisaquic, I think that probably you're very acquainted with that middle ground there at your school.
Definitely, Steve. And it's a, you know, it's a really important conversation to be had, and actually one, as Diane mentioned, is kind of all around the state, but also all around the country. These programs that would allow for students to be taking classes while either in high school or, you know, right out of high school. What we have going on the North Slope is we offer a dual credit program. And the students in high school, if they meet certain qualifications and have instructor approval and have a certain GPA, are able to take college-level courses. We've actually had a recent graduate from Barrow High who ended up with, I believe, their first year of college under their belt or a little bit more, which is really exciting and definitely a model we'd like to go after. The other thought is possibly having students have the opportunity to take, so they would just have one extra year of junior college after high school and then be able to get their AA and move on and transfer to four-year universities. For us, we have worked really closely with the school district to create that correct curriculum and make sure that we're in line so that our students have a seamless transition. Something that's very buzzwordy nowadays is the seamless transition from high school into college. Hmm. So we certainly have been working very hard on this topic to really give our students that opportunity to finish as early as they can and move on.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that. I hadn't been aware that that was the buzzword these days, but it sounds like it's a very much needed buzzword. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk at alaskapublic.org as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922, on the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. ConocoPhillips, the easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by the Federal Aviation Administration, setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports. FAA.gov/go/flyalaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704.
It's Talk of Alaska, the subject, what would be our best investment in education? And we've kind of zeroed in on this area between high school and college. You got your junior college, your prep schools, you got your vocational thrust. And, you know, what has come up as I'm thinking about it, Pearl Brower at Ilexovic, is you said they could do it in 1 year. And I'm thinking, you know, you have some schools have these great, like, gifted things. They have really students who really advance in high school, and then, bam, it's all over. They got to be a college freshman and do all college freshman stuff, and they can't get back to the really rewarding and creative work that they were doing back in high school.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's like, you know, there could be an advantage there for a more, as they say, quote, seamless transition of the gifted kids moving out of high school and moving right on to advanced education.
Definitely. It's very, I don't want to say it's easy, but it should be an easy conversation for people to get on board with. The frustrations and kind of the nitty-gritty of it can be a little taxing because of the requirements that we all have to worry about, and accreditation for both the school district and the college in any situation you're talking about. But it's definitely an important conversation to have and an important process to begin looking at and provide as an opportunity for students.
Let's go to Belle, joins the program from Cordova. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Belle.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're doing good.
Oh,
it's always fun to take an unlimited budget and dream what you could do with it.
Oh, man, I'm really good at that.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I was trained as a science teacher, but one thing I really started noticing as I worked with kids, and I love the kind of things that Pearl was talking about using a whale for science and math and language arts activities, but art and music make an incredible impact on kids. And I ran an alternative high school for a couple years for the Cordova School District, and that was how we got kids back on track, is with art and music. And once they had their confidence there, then they could do anything. And right now I run a program out in the villages. It's called Dancing with the Spirit, dancingwiththespirit.org. And what we do is we take a whole bunch of guitars and fiddles out to villages and stay there for a week, two of us, and we get everybody involved playing music and singing. And it's like miracles happen all the time. And I know that all over the state there's different people working in art and music. And I think involving the elders too, you know, like Trimble Gilbert, Reverend Trimble Gilbert in Arctic Village says, In the old days, we fought tribal wars with arrowheads. It's a different type of war now against drugs and alcohol. And I think music and art are like a low-tech suicide prevention, you know, way to keep kids in school programs. So I would just encourage, you know, all the artists and musicians to get involved in your schools, and you can really make a difference.
It's my observation that teachers need, they really like it when they get some community resources come in and volunteer themselves to be with the kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Belle. Any reaction to that, Diane Hirschberg?
Well, actually, when I was thinking about the question about where would I want to see some more resources and higher education, art and music actually came up because those are expensive programs that don't tend to generate a lot of income. You know, they're not getting big research grants to write the next great piece of music or do the next great sculpture. And yet we actually have some really amazing faculty and students in our system who need that support. We definitely could use more lab space, you know, creative space, both for creating the works and then for presenting them. We constantly are struggling to find big venues to have public lectures or performances. And so that would be something. And absolutely, it's a way of rounding out people's thinking. It's a way of getting a different perspective often on issues. You know, there's been a lot of really innovative art around climate change. Let's, you know, get some money there. I do want to respond to one thing that you said a little while ago, Steve, which is about what happens to students when they get to the university. And, you know, at UAA, we do actually have a very exciting honors and undergraduate research program, but that's another place, for a very concrete example, that's underfunded. When faculty teach in the Honors College can't actually afford to pay the full cost of our salary, and other departments help subsidize it, or we do it as an overload for a lot less money than we would normally get paid. And when we do undergraduate research with our students, if we don't have a grant on which we're doing research, but we're just bringing them in, we don't get any extra pay for spending the time to work with these wonderful young people. And, you know, it's time, it's an investment of our own personal resources and energy, but it makes, you know, these are the things that make college so exciting for our sharp young students, is they can do real research, they can get papers published, they can do presentations at national conferences, but we're never having enough funding to enable us to do the work we should be doing around that.
Yeah, I'm thinking, think about the debate team right now.
Ah, yes.
There's a success story.
Oh, fabulous.
And it seems that I'm sure it has to do with the teaching of it, but also it perpetuates itself. In other words, students see other students, you know, reaching a national and even international level of competitiveness, makes them motivated.
We have students that go outside for college and transfer back here because they realize, or they even come from outside to come to UAA because our debate team is internationally ranked and because of our undergraduate research and the fact that we have students getting Marshall scholarships and Fulbrights when they finish.
I'll tell you, the theater program is interesting too, because this is about the only college theater program where students get to direct.
Yes.
you don't have to be a graduate student to be a director. And where are you going to learn that stuff? You know, the community theater, and that's about it. So
yeah.
Here you've got the full black box and all that mentorship and the cast.
Yeah. But you know, if you go see where they're rehearsing, we're squished into tiny spaces. When I was part of the faculty musical, and you know, our music faculty are doing fabulous work with very little space.
Let's go to Shelley, joins the program from Ketchikan. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Shelley.
Good morning. Thanks for the discussion. This is important to Alaska. I would like to recommend a person who's been studying this for 40 or 50 years. His name is Lynn Stoddard. He's written a great book. It's called Educating for Human Greatness. And, you know, where primarily his interest is primary and elementary school, but this goes all the way up through college. I mean, the way young people learn, our school systems from K through college don't really address that. It's a shame. Anyway, his values or I guess his principles or things like valuing human diversity, in other words, resisting standardizing of students, you know, trying to make everybody into the same little square box when, you know, people don't fit. And then another thing is he respects autonomy and encourages and expects students to be responsible for their own education instead of delivering it to them. And invite inquiry and, you know, instead of imposing compulsory learning, invite students to look for the things they're interested in, because that'll make students excited about school. I was a high school teacher for many years, and by the time most students get to high school, they see school as a very artificial place. To them, school does not relate to the real world at all. And we can argue whether that's true or not, but that's still their perception, and their perception is what's important when we're trying to educate them. So I'm a real proponent of having students from, you know, K through 12 or K through college, instead of learning school things, they should be doing more real-world things. And then through that, they'll learn how to read and they'll learn math and they'll be excited about being in school. Too many of our kids are not excited about being in school.
Boy, yeah, I know. Even falling asleep, even coming to school without having full bellies. Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's lots of issues there.
Yeah, a lot of things Shelley.
We're school an artificial thing.
Yeah, thank you, Shelley. That is a fantastic point, and we got like 30 seconds, and we'll be out of time. We got to come back to this one. Pearl Brower, I'll let you have the last thought.
Well, I just want to thank everyone, and thank you, Steve, and thank you, Diane, for the great conversation and for all of the callers and everyone listening in. My last thought is really that education is really the key. It's something one of our elders said to us, one of our leaders, Evan Hobson Sr., education is the key, and that's what I always remember and move forward on. So as exciting as it is, we can continue to work forward and work together in partnership and really make an amazing future for Alaska.
Thank you so much, Pearl Brower. Diane Hirschberg, thanks for being with us today. We'll get back to this. As a matter of fact, next week, we'll go into Alex Hill's program, Geeks Without Borders. Yeah, this is getting those students out in the real world. That'll be next week on Talk of Alaska. Thanks to Dave Waldron, Josh Edge. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
Providence Imaging Center, providing diagnostic mammogram results to patients within one working day, led by Drs. Denise Farley and Heather Tauschuk, provimaging.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge will create 1,500 jobs during the 4 years of construction and spur thousands more after completion by creating access to affordable land for commercial, industrial, and residential use. For facts on the Kinnick Arm Bridge, visit kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.